We started way back in December of 2009, back at Christmas, and we looked at that God loved us so much that he sent his only son as a gift to us down in the little manger. We looked at him as the Messiah, and that's what we called that series, is we introduced this whole idea of Jesus being the Messiah, coming to save man, coming to reveal to us what God's perfect plan is, and that's salvation for all of mankind. And we even saw in the birth story, through the genealogy and through individual characters like Mary and like Joseph, that God has a perfect plan, and it's going to happen whether or not we're involved in it or not. God's plan's going to happen. But he has invited us into his perfect plan. And it's our choice to align ourselves in with his perfect plan. And that's what we talked about in that first series. And we talked about what it looks like to align ourselves with God's perfect plan. And we moved on to the next series called Footprints. And we understood that 2,000 years ago, Jesus made footprints in the sand here on our earth, on the earth where we live. And those footprints were footprints of a righteous man. They were footprints of righteousness. And where those footprints walked, that was righteousness. And we understood in that series that if we walk in those same footprints, then since the footprints are righteous and they walk into righteous areas and they do righteous things, then as long as we stay inside those footprints, we have the righteousness of Christ. And we're righteousness. And we get a chance to stand inside those righteous footprints. We understood that those footprints, they are the salt of the earth, the light of the earth. That means that these footprints brought hope to people. These footprints carried truth into a darkened world. And we, if we stand in those footprints, we get a chance to bring hope to people. We get a chance to bring light to a world that needs truth. We get a chance to bring salt to a world that needs hope. We learn that these footprints they're safe footprints. Not only are they safe footprints, but they are secure footprints. And as long as you are standing in these footprints, nothing can rock you. Because they're stable, they're secure, they're safe footprints. And that's important because those footprints lead us into some areas and some places that would normally be extremely dangerous. But because the footprints are safe, as long as we are staying in the footprints, we know we are safe and secure. No matter how dangerous or how freaked out, you know, the places are, that those footprints carry us to. And that's what led us to our next series. That Jesus' footprints, they ended up underneath the table of sinners. They ended up at parties with sinners and tax collectors. Jesus' footprints took him places where people needed him. He said that it's not the well that need a doctor or a hospital, it's the sick that need a doctor. And that's who he was going to, and that's where those footprints go. And so if you're going to walk in these footprints, then you're going to follow them into the places where they go. And that means that we need to share in all the different areas of our life, in all the places we are. And we talked about what sharing looks like. And sharing is that we are a fruit tree. And a fruit tree is important because Jesus constantly talks about, you know, you need to share your fruit. You need to be fruitful. You need to produce fruit. And fruit was interesting because as we looked at the difference between, well, one of the differences, one of the key differences between a fruit and a vegetable is that fruit is seed bearing. All fruit has seeds. So as you, as a tree, you bear fruit, and that fruit looks like Jesus. It's the fruit of the Spirit, spoken of in Galatians 5. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, all those things. Those are your fruits, and those are what drop off of you when you're kind to someone, when you're gentle to someone, when you share peace with someone. That's fruit dropping off, and what's awesome about that fruit is that inside that fruit is the seed of life. Not only one, but multiple seeds. So everywhere you spread fruit, that's a way that you can share the seed of life, this gospel message, this hope, this security, this salt, this light, this truth that you have, you can share that way. And it is our responsibility to share. If you're part of the kingdom, that's what a kingdom person does. They share so that others can be part of the kingdom. And then that brought us to our last series that we've been talking about all month. And that is, let me illustrate. Jesus says, let me illustrate the kingdom for you. Let me show you what the kingdom looks like. And the first one, and these have just been hard hitting. As he's coming to the end of the gospel, Jesus just shares some things that you squirm a little when you hear it. And they're so concrete. He says, if you're going to be a member of the kingdom, you have to forgive like the king forgives. It's not a you should. It's not a you could. It's a you must. You must forgive. As kingdom people, we forgive. That's it. That's the message. He said, let me illustrate for you what you're living for. Let me illustrate for you the reward. And we had an exciting service, that service. That was a service with the dry erase board and the sheep song. And that's a reward. We get a chance to go to heaven, and it's our choice. And that's what we talked about the week after that, was Jesus said, let me illustrate your choices. Because you have a choice. You can either choose life with God, or you can choose eternity in hell. It's your choice. Jesus says it's that black and white. He shared the parable of the 10 virgins. He shared the parable of the talents. And then the story of the sheep and the goats. And it's very clear. You choose. You choose your destiny. You choose your future. He said, let me illustrate your choices. But then, last week, we went into real life. No parables. And Jesus said, let me illustrate my choices. And we saw him in the Lord's at the Lord's Supper, breaking the bread. Grape juice from the vine, the wine. And then we saw him illustrate for us his choices. As he goes into the garden. And he anguishes over his choice. And that's where we're going to pick up today. And I'd like to go on and bring the lights down. I'm going to do something a little different for you this morning. This morning, we're not going to have anything up on the screen. And I typically read out of the NIV. I like to study out of the NAS. These are versions of the Bible. Sometimes the New King James Version has got things worded real well. But this is a version of the Bible that I don't typically go to a lot because it's a modern-day language, and sometimes you miss some of the study. But I really like it for where we're headed today because what I want to do for you is just simply read a story that you've heard a bazillion times. It's not a story that you're unfamiliar with. But because this translation shares it in such a conversational tone, I'm hoping we'll get a chance to have a refreshed view of Jesus saying, let me illustrate for you love. Let me show you what love is. So we'll pick up from the garden after he returns to his disciples the third time. He says, my time is up. The Son of Man is about to be handed over to the hands of sinners. Get up. Let's get going. My betrayer is here. The words were barely out of his mouth when Judas, the one from the 12, showed up. And with him a gang from the high priests and religious leaders brandishing swords and clubs. The betrayer had worked out a sign with them. The one I kiss, that's the one. Seize him. He went straight to Jesus, greeted him. How are you, Rabbi? And kissed him. Jesus said, friend, why this charade? Then they came on him, grabbed him, and roughed him up. One of those with Jesus pulled his sword and, taking a swing at the chief priest's servant, cut off his ear. Jesus said, put your sword back where it belongs. All who use swords are destroyed by swords. Don't you realize that I am able right now to call my father and 12 companies, more if I wanted them, of fighting angels, would be here, battle ready. But if I did that, how would the scriptures come true that say this is the way it has to be? Then Jesus addressed the mob. What is this? Coming out after me with swords and clubs as if I were a dangerous criminal? Day after day, I've been sitting in the temple teaching, and you never so much as lifted a hand against me. You've done it this way to confirm and fulfill the prophetic writings. Then all the disciples cut and ran. The gang that had seized Jesus led him before Caiaphas, the chief priest, where the religion scholars and leaders had assembled. Peter followed at a safe distance until they got to the chief priest's courtyard. Then he slipped in and mingled with the servants, watching to see how things would turn out. The high priest conspiring with the Jewish council, tried to cook up charges against Jesus in order to sentence him to death. But even though many stepped up, making one false accusation after another, nothing was believable. Finally, two men came forward with this. He said, "I can tear down the temple of God and after 3 days rebuild it." The chief priest stood up and said, "What do you have to say to this accusation?" Jesus kept silent. Then the chief priest said, "I command you, by the authority of the living God, to say if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." Jesus was curt. "You yourself said it, and that's not all. Soon you will see it for yourself. The Son of Man seated at the right hand of the Mighty One, arriving on the clouds of heaven." At that, the chief priest lost his temper, ripping his robes, yelling, "He blasphemed! Why do we need witnesses to accuse him? You all heard him blaspheme. Are you going to stand for such blasphemy?" They all said, "Death! That seals his death sentence." Then they were spitting in his face and banged him around. They jeered as they slapped him. "Prophesy, Messiah. Who hit you this time?" Then if this were a movie, the camera would then pan to Peter and then pan over to Judas and some of the passages that you talked about in Sunday school. And then the camera pans back over to Jesus, and Jesus has now been transported over to Pilate, the governor. It says Jesus was placed before the governor, who questioned him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus said, "If you say so." But when the accusations rained down hot and heavy from the high priests and the religious leaders, he said nothing. Pilate asked him, "Do you hear that long list of accusations? Aren't you going to say something?" Jesus kept silent, not a word from his mouth. The governor was impressed, really impressed. It was an old custom during the feast for the governor to pardon a single prisoner named by the crowd. At that time, they had the infamous Jesus Barabbas in prison. With the crowd before him, Pilate said, "Which prisoner do you want me to pardon, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus the so-called Christ?" He knew it was through sheer spite that they had turned Jesus over to him. While court was still in session, Pilate's wife sent him a message. "Don't get mixed up in judging this noble man. I've just been through a long and troubled night because of a dream about him." Meanwhile, the high priest and religious leaders had talked the crowd into asking for the pardon of Barabbas and the execution of Jesus. The governor asked, "Which of the two do you want me to pardon?" They said, "Barabbas." "Then what do I do with Jesus, the so-called Christ?" They all shouted, "Nail him to a cross." He objected, "But for what crime?" But they yelled all the louder, "Nail him to a cross." When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere and that a riot was imminent, he took a basin of water and washed his hands in full sight of the crowd, saying, "I am washing my hands of responsibility of this man's death. From now on, it is in your hands, your judge and jury." The crowd answered, "We'll take the blame, we and our children after us." Then he pardoned Barabbas, but he had Jesus whipped and then handed over for crucifixion. The soldiers assigned to the governor took Jesus into the governor's palace and got the entire brigade together for some fun. They stripped him and dressed him in a red toga. They weaved together a crown from branches of a thorn bush and set it on his head. They put a stick in his right hand for a scepter. Then they knelt before him in mocking reverence. "Bravo, King of the Jews," they said. "Bravo." Then they spit on him and hit him on the head with the stick. When they had had their fun, and took off the toga and put his own clothes back on him. Then they proceeded out to the crucifixion. Along the way, they came on a man from Cyrene named Simon and made him carry Jesus' cross. Arriving at Golgotha, the place they call Skull Hill, they offered him a mild painkiller, a mixture of wine and myrrh. But when he tasted it, he wouldn't drink. After they had finished nailing him to the cross and were waiting for him to die, they whiled away the time by throwing dice for his clothes. Above his head, they had posted the criminal charge against him. "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Along with him, they also crucified two criminals, one to his right and the other to his left. People passing along the road jeered, shaking their heads in mock lament. "You bragged that you could tear down the temple and then rebuild it in 3 days. So, show us your stuff. Save yourself. If you're really God's son, come down from that cross." The high priests, along with the religion scholars and leaders, were right there mixing it up with the rest of them, having a great time poking fun at him. "He saved others. Can't he save himself? King of Israel, is he? Then let him get down from that cross. We'll all become believers then." He was so sure of God. "Well, let him rescue his son now, if he wants him." Did he claim to be God's son? Didn't he? Even the two criminals crucified next to him joined in their mockery. From noon to 3, the whole earth was dark. Around mid-afternoon, Jesus groaned out of the depths, crying loudly, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you abandoned me?" Some bystanders who heard him say, said, "He's calling for Elijah." One of them ran and got a sponge soaked in sour wine and lifted it on a stick so he could drink. The others joked, "Don't be in such a hurry. Let's see if Elijah comes and saves him." But Jesus, again crying out loudly, breathed his last. No one will ever love you more. No one. Let me illustrate. Love. Years ago in one of the youth conventions that we were at, I saw a group of teenagers, and they all had the same shirt on, and their shirt said what my shirt says today. And when I first saw it, I thought, Barabbas, who's Barabbas? How can they all be Barabbas? That just doesn't make any sense to me. And I was thinking, you know, it sounds like a Bible name. I should know it. I was graduated from Bible college, and really racking my brain trying to think, who is Barabbas? And it's not Barnabas. That's the guy with Paul. And there's another guy, Bar-Jonah. He's different. Then it hit me. And when it hit me, it was like a ton of bricks. Barabbas. Mark tells us in his gospel that Barabbas was a murderer. He was an insurrectionist. He was not the kind of guy that you'd want to see set free. But that day, in the most physical sense, Jesus was the reason why Barabbas walked. Guilty of sin, judged, condemned. In fact, he might have been the one headed for the cross where Jesus hung that day to pay for his guilt of murder, rebellion. But because Jesus came on the scene, Barabbas, guilty, walked free. I realized what those shirts meant. That's me. I'm guilty, filthy, judged. I mean, it's clear. In the light of God's word, the things that I do, they're wrong. I deserve death. But because Jesus came onto my scene, I get to be Barabbas. I get to walk free. Because Jesus said, let me illustrate love for you. This morning, we want to offer a time of invitation. And if something from the message of the crucifixion has pushed you over the edge and you realize, I want Jesus. I want to be Barabbas today. If you want to walk free, though you're guilty of sin, if you want your sin taken care of, then just simply come forward and give your life to Jesus Christ. Be baptized into him. Receive the gift of the Holy Spirit and receive forgiveness of your sins, a pardon. Just like Barabbas received that day in the physical sense, you can receive today in the spiritual sense.